On today's College Football Inquirer, Indiana has a new quarterback. His former coach just threw him under the bus. Also, Ross Dellinger with a story on how Duke is managing to succeed in this era in not just basketball. They're doing it in football, too. Plus, does Texas Tech really not have dumbbells under 40 pounds in the weight room? We examine all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. And thank goodness coaches have podcasts, guys.
Yeah.
Because we might not have as much to talk about if they didn't. But since they do, we get things like Sonny Dykes talking about Josh Hoover. And for those, you know, who don't know everybody involved here, Sonny Dykes is the TCU head coach. Josh Hoover is the former TCU quarterback who has decamped to Indiana, where he will attempt to replace Fernando Mendoza, the Heisman Trophy winner, and he will attempt to help Indiana defend its national title. Guys, Sonny Dykes was on a podcast that is run by TCU's Collective, and he had a very interesting quote about one Josh Hoover. Let's hear it.
Numbers are numbers and stats are stats. And I think, you know, you look for us, and I think Josh started 31 games here as a quarterback, and we turned the ball over 40. He turned the ball over 42 times in those 31 starts.
Josh Hoover, yes. Lots Spicy. Of turnovers at TCU. This was not a secret, by the way, everybody. But Godfrey?
Yes, sir. Very excited about this one.
Did you find it interesting that Sonny Dykes like made sure to, instead of just the he impersonal pronoun, that he went with the proper noun, Josh?
All right, I got it. We got to do the obvious, get this out of the way. We in the media are sometimes guilty of a little bit of hypocrisy, where we wag our fingers and we say, man, the coach really shouldn't have said that. And then we spend all the rest of our time complaining, God, yes. I wish an interesting thing would be said in the media.
Yes.
I'm so sick of the press conference pablum and, oh, but we got a great team this year. It's a good effort. Da, da, da. So I want to be clear here. I want to send a personal thank you right now to the old Texas Christian football team and their head coach. Okay. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate this. I want more of y'all to run off at the mouth. Now, let's talk about why he should not have said that, okay? here's why he should not have said that. First, Andy and I, we said this right before we went on the air, that we both listened to not just the clip that you heard, but more of the interview. Because when I heard it on Wednesday, the 25th, I thought, that's cut up out of context. This is a classic social media, like, bait and switch, right? He's not really slamming Hoover this, specifically this publicly. Well, then I listen to the rest of it, and no, he definitely is. He 100.
Right.
Like, there's
this
no.
This is not taken out of
we're
context.
Not, yeah. This is
what
exactly
you heard
what he said.
Is the context.
So let's start with why this is bad for Sonny before we get into the facts of this. What you have done is you have now taken everything that is and isn't about the current TCU football team going from 25 into 26. Let's not talk about anything. Just the current state of TCU football, and you have either deliberately, but I think inadvertently, now installed yourself into a comparison with the undefeated defending national champions, right? Because the
Who
way
might
that,
have the greatest coach in college
of all time. Yeah. And we'll talk about the transfer quarterback nature and Indiana's, you know, mystical healing abilities and how Fernando Mendoza might have looked at Cal this time last year. We could talk about all that. But what you've accidentally done, or intentionally, but I don't know. That's not crazy like a fox. That's just crazy. Is that Mr. Dykes is saying this quarterback, it's what is the stupid ringer thing, Ewing theory? Like, this is now, we are going to be better because this this quarterback who we promoted, who we touted, who we showered with love, who I pushed in the media, who I kept naming the starter of my football team for however many years, right? Mm-hmm. However many total games, was the reason we have not achieved as much as we should have back when we were going to the national championship game a couple years back, okay? So that's what you are telling us. And now you are telling us we will be better because the undefeated defending national champion took our quarterback. That is not that is not an examination
better be better.
That I
better
would be want to enter into if I was, let's say, a fair to Midland TCU program at present.
Yeah. I don't know what you have to do to be better. I guess what they won 9 games last year. They won 9 games the last couple of years.
They won 9 games. And now I will point out, and this may be where Sonny Dykes is coming from. They beat a relatively full strength. Well, not relatively, but they didn't have the receivers. But a decent strength USC team in the Alamo Bowl with Ken Seals as the starting quarterback. Ken Seals, who started as a freshman at Vanderbilt a million years ago.
Yeah, Vanderbilt great.
Yeah, and they won without Josh Hoover, who, by the way, according to Sonny Dykes in this podcast, was the only Horned Frog who opted out of the Alamo Bowl. I think there's some, I think there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, we got some big feelings. We got some big coach feelings about a player. These are always inadvisable. He's breaking so many no-nos inside the coaching fraternity that I'm kind of shocked that it's a salty veteran like Dykes. I really am.
Here's the thing, though. He could be right.
Yeah, you're right. He could be. But he just drew a keyhole-sized target for him, for his entire program to hit in 26.
Well, he did that, and he also essentially set up a something that could reflect very poorly on him. And I'm not talking about what he said. I'm talking about if Josh Hoover, who was, as Sonny Dykes points out, a turnover machine during his 31 games as the starter at TCU, what if he goes to Indiana and is not a turnover machine?
Correct.
And takes good care of the ball.
Yeah.
That reflects very poorly on Sonny Dykes.
This is what I'm talking about. Right. Yeah. Right. You have not only inadvertently set the expectation that TCU will be as good as the defending national champion, you are also sort of kind of wish casting against Hoover's progression. If anything, what Sonny Dykes is saying is, watch, he's going to go to the defending national champions and he's going to turn the ball over a bunch. That's probably not going to happen, guys. I doubt that he's going to look TCU level. He's probably going to look better just because the roster around him is better.
Well, hasn't every quarterback that Cignetti's had has kind of looked better than where they were previously with the previous year? We all know, I'm guessing that we all know Sonny fairly well. This didn't strike me as too surprising. Sonny seems to often just sort of speak off the cuff, and
he will tell you how he feels.
Yeah, doesn't really care as much, which is great. So I don't know that this is a big surprise. I don't know that he thought it out, that he thinks out some of his answers and all that, right? This struck me as that, like, it's Sonny, but you're right, Godfrey, that it does, you kind of paint a target on your back there with this.
Well, and it's the more interesting part of this conversation is actually the Indiana one. It's not the TCU one. It is, can Kurt Cignetti and Mike Shanahan, their offensive coordinator, do this again with another quarterback? Because Fernando Mendoza was regarded as a very good quarterback coming out of Cal. Georgia wanted him. Miami wanted him. He was very well regarded. Coaches liked him.
Mm-hmm.
He had completed 69% of his passes the last year at Cal, 3,000 yards, 7.8 yards per attempt, which is high side of average, 16 TDs, 6 interceptions. But these are not spectacular numbers. And then he goes to Indiana and does what he does.
Yeah.
So the question is, will Mike Shanahan and Kurt Cignetti unlock something in Josh Hoover, who, by the way, was a coveted quarterback in the transfer portal last year?
Yep.
Opted to stay at TCU. And because remember, when Nico left Tennessee, Josh Hoover was pretty much their first call.
Yes.
And he's
yes.
like, no, I'm good here in Fort Worth. So
I remember vetting him on Nashville radio when they were freaking out. That was the one that every Vol fan wanted.
And I remember when he stayed, the celebration sort of back at Fort Worth for the excitement of the season.
Well, I don't know why, Ross, because he sucked.
Yeah, he's apparently
turned
not.
Turned a damn ball over.
Yeah. Now, remember, part of the context of the question was about the new offensive coordinator at TCU, Gordon Samus, who was at UConn, and UConn took good care of the ball last year. So it also may have been some shade at, well, it would have been some shade at Kendall Briles, who's now the offensive coordinator at South Carolina, except that Sonny made very clear to say Josh. And when he said we, he then changed to he. So.
Yeah, God forbid we offend Kendall Briles, but he you're right. He specifically targeted his ex-quarterback. By the way, Here's a fun stat, I guess. Maybe Sonny's onto something. Will Howard's first senior year at Kansas State, 10 interceptions, 24 touchdowns, 61.3 completion percentage. I'm looking on Sports Reference, and they put a neat little trophy next to a year when you win a national title. So on the next year, when he won a national title for Ohio State, also had 10 interceptions. Maybe Sonny's onto something. Now, he did have 35 touchdowns.
A few more touchdowns.
He increased his completion percentage by a full 12 percentage points. So it's slightly different. My point is this. The context of a quarterback's
Fernando
quality.
Fernando Mendoza also had 6 interceptions.
That bastard.
Last year.
God, what a
Indiana. 41 touchdowns.
Absolutely worthless. Fernando Mendoza, like, you are betting against. It's an emerging market, but it's sort of an obvious one right now. Which is that we just got done talking about this on Tuesday's show with, like, hey, really good basketball talent is concentrating up as they transfer from smaller schools to larger ones. And that's why you're not, this is why we're seeing the absence of Cinderella. The same thing can be said about college sports. I acknowledge that we're going to have to come to terms with this as a group of whatever supporters. You are seeing decent quarterbacks move into elite rosters at the very top of the sport with consistency. And they are looking better for it. This is all subjective to some degree. You can manipulate stats to some degree. But it is hard to argue with an undefeated team coming out of a Big Two conference and walking through the tournament. So Fernando Mendoza was a better quarterback, full stop, no argument, at Indiana than he was at Cal. This would lead one to believe, especially a veteran head coach like our boy Sonny, who we all like, to maybe adopt a different conversation topic in March, where we can, this is going to get played out all the way through the offseason. It's March. We still got till August, y'all.
The bigger question, I think, is can Indiana do this again? And I think at this point, because these are economies of scale, did Kurt Cignetti do it again at James Madison? Yes, he did. He continued doing it again at James Madison. Has he done it again in Indiana already? Yes, he did, because most people would consider what he did year one in Indiana to be an almost impossible feat and almost impossible to surpass. And then he did. So I'm not betting against him. I don't care how many interceptions Josh Hoover threw at TCU. I'm not betting against him.
29-13 is the TD ratio, TD interception ratio last year. 29-13, which, by the way, is not horrific. Like, not that. I mean, like, it is a Kendall Bryle system. It is the old Big 12 sort of air raid philosophy. I know it's changed a lot, but that you're still chucking that rock, baby. So 29-13 is not the worst stat line I've seen for one of these quarterbacks in one of these offenses. Adjust that. Let's just say he throws 2 fewer interceptions and 5 more touchdowns. His completion percentage was 65.9. If you get it up 5 percentage points, which is something I definitely think you could do at Indiana, given that roster, that's going to be the recipe roughly for a national championship quarterback. Like, if we're just moneyballing this. Again, Sonny, guy, let's think before we speak. But thank you for not.
But let's also talk about the starters in the national championship game at quarterback in the past few years. They are all people with extensive starting experience at other schools, with the one exception. J.J. McCarthy at Michigan is your exception. But Michael Penix Jr. at Washington, who's his second year as a Washington starter, but he had multiple years as Indiana starter before that. Riley Leonard at Notre Dame, multiple years as Duke starter before he was Notre Dame starter. Will Howard, multiple years as Kansas State starter before he was Ohio State starter. Fernando Mendoza, we've talked about.
Beck.
And then Carson Beck, obviously. So guess what? The formula is pretty clear now. You find somebody who has started 2 to 3 seasons at a fairly high level in college football and surround him with a lot of talent. Guess what? You're going to be in pretty good shape.
Experience, right? I was on the phone with somebody just yesterday talking about the recruiting of quarterbacks. I know we talked about it on the show quite a bit. Like, the programs that are doing the whole high school and we're going to develop like the old days versus what Indiana, what Miami, and plenty of others have done, which is we're just going to get a new experience transfer every year to come in. And judging what you just said, Andy, right, it makes you believe that that's sort of the better way to go. You know, I mean, it's a small sample size the last few years. With the playoff expanding, I'm guessing we'll have opportunities here in the next couple of years to see more.
There's still going to be cases where a really good quarterback gets signed out of high school. I think CJ Carr is a good example of that at Notre Dame. My guess is Notre Dame will be in the playoff this year. CJ Carr in year two as a starter will be very effective for them.
If I had to right now in March, like a moron on a podcast would, pick a national champion for the forthcoming season, it would probably be one with a homegrown quarterback. So Notre Dame and Carr, Sayin at Ohio State, state of Georgia made human in Gunnar Stockton for the Bulldogs with his 1988
JKS and Cal. Oh, wait, sorry. Not quite ready for that yet. The world's not ready for that yet.
And then, the young man in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, Texas. That's what I was thinking of, the arch guy. Yeah. You know, it's true. It's just been a small kind of sample size the last few years since like the portal really became a big thing with NIL, what, three-ish, four years or so?
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see.
If one of those happens, by the way, I don't know if we will be back next offseason talking about how things have changed. I think that the reason I bring that up is that it's never going to be completely one way or the other.
Yeah.
I think if anything, your odds might be better flipping in the short term with a really good roster than it is the patience of developing the 3 or 4 years.
Well, and Mario Cristobal is a good example of this. Mario Cristobal has become a transfer quarterback guy. Made that very clear when they decided they had Emory Williams on the roster last year, and they talked about maybe him being the starting quarterback, and then basically as the season went on, they're like, no, we're just going to go get another experienced guy, and they went and got Darian Mensah, but they don't feel that way about the whole roster. They feel that way about that position. Like, they still want elite offensive linemen, elite defensive linemen out of high school. They still want elite receivers out of high school.
They can get them. You know, those places, certain places can get those players.
The wide receiver thing I want to come back to, because we're going to hit the draft here, and I know we're going to be doing draft adjacent content soon. I'm curious about the wide receivers as we go, because I think they're growing more and more expensive. So that's a conversation I think we could revisit. The one that I'm more interested in is the last five winners. Is it five now in the portal? And then the next five. Offensive line to me is way more. I think that's the husky canary in the coal mine. Our big old boy, our big old trench boys. Is how patchwork and how much turnstile can you have at that position group for a national championship team? Because that's the one it feels like that to your point, Andy, and it's maybe because their head coach is an old offensive lineman himself, that's the one they seem to be really fixated on from the age of 17, like much more consistency from the 17 to 22.
You got to have some of that. But like, Miami had transfers on its offensive line. They had, I believe, two transfers on the line.
Yeah.
James Brockermeyer was the one who came in, who was a one-year guy.
Yeah.
The center. So.
But you could sprinkle.
Yeah.
That's a sprinkle. We don't want to.
Here's an example. Like Indiana this coming season, they got Joe Brunner from Wisconsin to fill one of the guard spots. They're expected to start four guys who played for Indiana last year. Other than that,
I think that is why if I had to isolate a single position preview, I think that's why I'm pushing Indiana by default back into the playoff. And they did the same thing last year, too, because they got old boy from Notre Dame.
Pat Coogan, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing, that if you have one spot or maybe two spots and you can fill with a veteran, that's great, which is exactly what they're doing right now, because Brunner was a long-time starter at Wisconsin.
Yeah, you want a sprinkle.
But you want some cohesion there. You want some people who understand. And offensive linemen tend to be culture setters in the locker room.
Do they, Andy?
So that's a big piece of it. But also, it's the ultimate floor raiser. I was doing these win totals for all the different conferences, and I was looking at Virginia. Virginia had a really good offensive line last year. Guess what? They're probably going to have a good one again this year.
Right.
So I feel confident that Virginia is going to be good again this year. Mm. It's the easiest. Okay. You have a harder time screwing this up if you're good up front.
Ross.
Yeah.
Do you know who the culture setter on our podcast is? Ex-offensive lineman.
Yes.
There he just, yeah, he didn't want to admit it, but there you go. It's always true. A big guy in the room.
A little slimmer.
Yeah, but I
these
shouldn't
days.
Have been an offensive
a little
lineman.
Slimmer, yeah,
I,
yeah.
I'm learning now I should have been a linebacker or a fullback. Dude, I just ate my way into the offensive line.
You are spiritually an offensive lineman, sir. You always will be.
Well, this is going to be fascinating to watch because, as you put it, Godfrey, there's a target now on Sonny Dykes because he said this, where everybody is going to pile on him if Josh Hoover is better. Now, Sonny Dykes got his own transfer quarterback, and maybe that guy plays better than Josh Hoover did for TCU, and I think that would help. He's got an interesting story, too. His name is Jaden Craig. Mm. Y'all know where he came from?
Go on.
Harvard.
What a wow. Weird. What a. Wait. Okay. Man.
Saved by the Bell fans will recognize the pronunciation.
I got the bit, and then it threw me, and I was trying to make a football point, and then I started thinking about Zach. Sorry.
Well,
can we get
Zach
Mark
just
Paul Gosselaar on
the SAT,
show?
So.
Well, I guess we should get AC Mario on the show because I mean he did. Did AC Slater go on to play college football, or am I dreaming that?
I thought he might have been a college wrestler. He was a better wrestler than he was a football player.
We need to holler at Golic and get his uncle on here. Technically a cast member.
Yes, that's true.
All right, wreck the segment. Get us out of here.
No, Jaden Craig comes in, and the thing is, if Jaden Craig is really good at TCU, if he puts up numbers as good or better than Josh Hoover, then I think there's a couple things at play here. You say, okay, this is what they can get out of a quarterback, and that's fine. But if it's not good, if it's not better, and Josh Hoover is having a good season at Indiana, it's not going to look good.
It's just like, I'm going back to the beginning of the segment, guys. Can you, like, if I just snap my fingers and said, start naming teams that are better than TCU in the Big 12 this year, go, like, you could probably get to 4 or 5, right?
Texas,
like,
Tech, BYU, Utah, and then you start having questions.
Arizona State?
Arizona State, Houston.
Like Houston, I think Houston's gonna be really good this year. Like, I'm just saying, this isn't the year that they're like, we're primed. Like, this is this was a choice, Sonny.
Yeah, the Big 12 has a big middle anyway. So even if you think you're gonna be pretty good, there's like the margins between a 5-win season and an 8-win season in the Big 12 are gonna be fairly thin.
Now we have this Texas Tech thing of the spending money, and we're gonna, you know, Cody Campbell and all that, but. When this Big 12 was formed, I called it the 2 a.m. Vegas buffet. It's like, do I want soft serve, ice cream, and crab claws right now, and a little bit of fondue? Yes, I do, because I'm completely smashed out of my mind.
It's all pretty good. It's not going to give you food poisoning.
Right. So just think of a drunk person with a platter inside a windowless room, and they're like, I want some UCF, and I want some Colorado, and then I want some Big 8. Just give me
sprinkle Alonzo Barnett from JMU on the
yes.
So I mean, the recipe.
By the way, this is not a slight.
The Big 12 lead all like conferences too, and like maybe fourth quarter. It was like fourth quarter lead changes or something. Yes. You know, every game was.
But it's funny because Brett Yormark got up at Big 12 Media Days last year and said, "Hey, somebody needs to separate themselves," and three teams did.
Yeah,
And
then one team separated itself much further from the other two.
The oil money took that. They said bet.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, this is a conference that has DJ Lagway in it this year. And did you see the video of DJ Lagway throwing at Baylor practice? Did you see it? You want to talk about out of context? It's three throws. They wobbled. And oh boy, the internet went nuts.
Guys, this is the most, this is not partisanship. This is the most, if you were trapped in a room for a football season, you can only watch one conference. I'm telling you, you have to pick the Big 12 every time.
It'd be the most entertaining. Like I know this because I did a column for On Three that comes out Thursday about the Big 12 win totals. And so I was looking at every team. Guys, West Virginia went to Houston and won in November last year.
Yeah, they did. That was a huge loss. That was a huge loss for
sense whatsoever.
No.
Deion Sanders is the fifth most interesting thing happening right now.
Yeah.
The most in the league of anybody by far.
Can you imagine just Rich Rodriguez turns to the camera and he goes, my name's Rich Rodriguez. Welcome to Jackass. I mean, I'm telling you, if you want entertainment, you watch this league. If you want consistency, I don't know, go watch one of those boring $1 billion Big 2s.
Sorry, Michigan.
It's all interesting. We love it all. It doesn't matter what level you love. I think we've made that abundantly clear on the show.
I love bad football.
Gentlemen, when we come back, let's talk about a school that is playing good, well, a little bit of good everything. Good basketball, good football. Ross had a really interesting story about Duke and how it is adjusted to this era. Are we latching on? Is this a localization of the big story that they're in the Sweet 16? Hell yeah. But also,
year round podcast.
Talk Duke football too, because that is a fascinating subject. Be right back. We are back to College Football Inquirer, and Ross Dellinger has a very fun story on Yahoo about the Duke Blue Devils, who, listen, the Duke we're thinking about right now is John Shire's team that is about to play St. John's in the Sweet 16 on Friday night. Classic matchup for those of us who grew up loving college basketball. Rick Pitino gets his chance to play against a Duke team that, you know, John Shire was probably in elementary school when Christian Laettner hit that shot, but Rick Pitino against Duke in the NCAA tournament will always be interesting. That said, Ross's story is about not just Duke men's basketball, which is the featured program at the school, but the fact that Duke as a school, as an athletic department, has managed in this era to do what we didn't think schools would be able to do, small private schools specifically. And that's have a consistent, broad winning athletic program. Duke in this school year, the ACC football champion, the ACC men's basketball champion, the ACC women's basketball champion. Ross, how are they doing this?
First time we've had a power conference school win all three in the history of sports. It only goes back to when the football championship game started, right? So in the SEC in the early 90s, most others 15 to 20 years ago. But first time we had one, yeah, do it. You know, and I should say, like, it's not just the small private school thing, right? Because we certainly have plenty of small private schools succeeding in this era with football. I mean, Miami,
it's the
SMU,
high academic
just
small
in the,
private
right.
school.
It's a little bit more of high academic and basketball sort of centric, right? I mean, think about, you know, Duke's football stadium seats 35,000 people.
It's quaint, though.
Duke's
it's hosted a Rose Bowl.
Arena.
It has hosted a Rose Bowl. It's not a joke.
I mean, their basketball arena is quaint people. Also.
Yeah, 9,000 people. Again, like, that is obviously, you guys know, right? It's one third of the big three in revenue for an athletic department. One third of one of those three is ticket sales, and they just don't have that like others have. So I just think a lot of people sort of expect it in this era. And again, we're really early on in this era, but I think a lot of people maybe expected like the basketball schools without a big football program, without maybe big football donors, football ticket sales, all that stuff, was not going to be able to do something like they're kind of doing across the board. But at least early indications are that not just the small private schools like the Miamis and SMUs and all that, but small private basketball schools are doing it too. And how are they doing it? To get back to you, finally back to your question, Andy, from the university, subsidies from the university, right? They will not reveal how much money has increased in the last 5 to 10 years from the university.
I bet.
But I'm guessing it's significant. And it's always been a big part of their budget there, again, because they don't have the football sort of ticket sales and even basketball to an extent, ticket sale money like others have. But, you know, so they're needing university funds, and they've gotten more out of the university the last 2 or 3 years than they have previously. I think the university and its board and president all sort of like made the commitment of, all right, we can't slip in this, especially our men's basketball program. So we're going to have to continue to pump money. And in the bigger picture, right, we've talked about this a lot. This is happening at certainly a lot of schools where the university is having to subsidize more than ever the athletic department and treat it like another department and just fund it like a marketing branding department. So that's,
I mean, it's kind of what they're doing. It is essentially the marketing arm.
Yeah.
Or that's how, even years and years ago, that's how a lot of presidents viewed athletics as a marketing arm.
Just a lot of them were self-sustaining, right? Especially the top, 25, 30 were self-sustaining. They gave money back to the university. Mm-hmm. Those days seem to be over or very near over.
But my thing with the private school, it's their money. They can use it however they want. It's not my money. I'm not paying for this. I mean, so they've got Duke's got a $5 billion endowment. And I have no problem with this. I think it's interesting that they're pulling it off in football. Basketball, they've always been pulling it off. They've been good in basketball forever. But the football part of it, you know, you look at other than there's 3 years of David Cutcliffe where he was really successful. He won the division 1 year and then had a 10-win season, a 9-win season, an 8-win season all in a row, and then that success stopped. But if we look at the last 4 years of Duke football, so that's 2 years of Mike Elko, 2 years of Manny Diaz, 9 wins, 8 wins, 9 wins, 9 wins, ACC championship. And you can laugh at the ACC championship this year because they were 7-5 in the regular season.
We should laugh.
But they still won it.
Hey, Duke got the ring.
Oh, yeah. God. Sure.
And also, you go back to the situation Duke football's in right now where Darian Vincent just left for Miami. Nobody's shedding a tear for Duke football. Because they lost Darian Mensah. Because Darian Mensah also left Tulane.
They took him from Tulane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They threw a bunch of
money
at him.
$8 million deal. Two-year, $8 million. Which goes back to this conversation, right? When he signed that, I think virtually everybody in the country, especially like a lot of coaches, were like, what the F? Duke is paying what?
Duke's serious?
It was just
Duke
a sign
wants to win
of,
like we do.
Yeah, it's just a sign of this what this whole story is about, which is, hey, they decided, hey, you know what, we're not going to fall behind, and we're going to start pumping money from the university into the athletic department like we never have before.
Okay, there's a lot of places we can go with this. One, you should always laugh at the 2025 ACC championship race in football. That was
That's
an absolute.
True.
That was an affront to God and the playoff.
The stories I wrote every week, like. We did the first one with like 4 weeks to go in the season. And my bosses are like, we need this every Sunday morning from now on.
What?
It's the ACC championship picture.
Yes.
Because people love it.
Okay. It's funny because I was about to kind of bull rush the premise of this segment is that we back up and say, wait, we were shocked that a well-funded private school notorious for pumping out generations of Cobra Kai looking VC bros is suddenly shockingly good at funding
football
sports.
They've been really bad at football historically.
Which I do maintain that sentiment. Oh, wait, you're shocked that the bad guy in every 80s teen movie is suddenly rich enough to buy themselves a championship here or there? That sentiment holds. But what Ross's story is actually interesting. It has nothing to do with Duke. It has to do with a long-term bet that the Dukes of the world are placing with a really, really cloudy forecast, which is how long are you going to over-leverage? We don't know what the ROI on this is. And the function, and Ross, I'll throw it back to you. The sort of, we have become very lazy with this narrative that athletics is the front porch to every university and it's always going to drive enrollment. That's true when you're in a low-income state like Alabama. And you're boosting enrollment at a public university, right? And football is a free advertisement for your school on nationwide television on CBS.
And you're taking more out-of-state students to pay full tuition.
That's, by the way, that was the secret at Alabama was it wasn't like some kid in Bessemer had never heard of Bama. It was that some kid in New Jersey saw a bunch of attractive women and a warm climate in late October and went down.
It also wasn't a secret. It was the state reduced funding for state universities. They needed to find money to do that. They needed more out-of-state students. Nick Saban helped them find those out-of-state students.
Yeah, it's honestly poor economic management from the individual southern states. It's not this renaissance of like, oh, people want a conservative environment, warm weather. And like, no, dude, this was just effective marketing to backstop a crappy budget. This is all different on the private school level, right? I'm curious, what is the long-term play? And Ross, you hint at it. I mean, you obviously can't answer it right now. I'm watching the same thing happen down the street from my house at Vanderbilt, which is you activated.
Can I hazard a guess as to why they would want to do this right now?
Go for it.
Ross, what Ross conference do they want to be in 5 years?
Yes. Many predict a splintering of the ACC and many of their schools being scattered about and going into the Big Ten or SEC or some other league, right? And actually, Nina King, the AD at Duke, mentioned that in a previous interview with me about a year and a half ago, when they started to really, the university started to really start to, you know, subsidize athletics, she just expressed confidence that Duke was not going to get left behind and was going to, the way she put it, we'll be able to go in with that next group of schools, whoever they are, and break off, you know, is how she framed it. Which is sort of, again, a nod to some kind of future fracturing of the bigger spending power leagues from everybody else. And everybody lives sort of, not everybody, but I think outside of the top 20 brands in college football lives in fear that they're not going to make whatever cut this is. And that really, I think, judging by her statements and other statements that she and others at Duke have made, that's a big fear that they live in. That's a big fear that I think a lot of basketball-centric schools live in as well, which, again, makes it all the more important of what they're doing right now and how they probably need to continue to, as best they can, pump the money into these athletic programs.
This scares me a good bit as someone who wants for a healthy and sane college football. Because I didn't do much in college, but my favorite class is actually macroeconomics. And I think I made a B. Anxiety-based markets don't last long. You can't keep this thing going based off of an invisible monster because eventually
That's college sports has been an anxiety-based market for the entirety of its existence.
Yes, but this particular, like some of the numbers that are in this story, and this is just Duke. We're not talking about the other 30, 40, 50, 60 programs that are overspending like this. The other fact of this is the, whatever you want to call it, the invisible hand, the Super League, the day of reckoning, whatever, that's probably going to come to pass here soon because of television contracts. Andy, you know this. Like, we're going to sever off this current deal. We're going to rework a next deal. This is why I bring up stuff like the Ellisons and CBS and all the stuff that's going on in Hollywood right now, because the trickle down of that is going to be who is in a position, how many suitors are you going to have for college football when the next big rights deal comes up, because we're going to get closer to locking in those haves and have-nots. And I think at a certain point when that happens, and I would love for somebody who works in economics to hash this out, well, or tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Let's say Duke doesn't make the haves, then you stop spending the money.
Like, this is what I'm talking about. That's not the problem, right? We're all going to overspend in hopes. We're all sort of putting out a bid, Andy. We're all overspending in hopes that we can have inclusion into this particular rarefied group. That's not a sustainable economic model. That's a temporary spike. The problem is that everyone else in the industry takes the amount of money that's being spent right now as a given. We always expect this number to go up, the spending, the revenue, and everything. I think we might be experiencing a bubble in everything from player compensation on, and in coaching compensation for that matter, and this thing's going to pop eventually.
They'll adjust. Everybody freaks out about these bubbles.
Yes.
Oh, there's a bubble. Okay. If suddenly the bubble pops and there's no money or there's less money, they will spend less money.
Andy, do you have any athletic department employees listen to the show?
Oh, I know. And I feel bad for them because
I'm saying my ass would feel
a
really
lot of them have
right
jobs
now.
Because they couldn't give money to the players and they created all these jobs that maybe didn't need to be there.
But so say you're a longtime media veteran and now you've been hired by this collective faux nonsense, like exactly what we talked about in the first segment today of TCU, that came out of TCU produced media. One of the things that you're seeing now fundamentally, unless you're someone like Ross or a handful of other reporters, is you're not getting any access anymore because anything that would generate any natural interest in the media is going to be produced, distributed, and owned in-house
by these
schools.
And what's funny is most schools are actually terrible at
control
that.
Control their own media.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because media
most schools really are bad at it.
Believe it or not.
They're
as
hiring
dumb as
us.
Yes. Right? Yes, yeah. Believe it or not, as dumb as this show looks, it's actually like there is an art to this, okay? In the words of Steven Tyler, you'd have no idea how much it costs to look this cheap. This is all a bubble.
I think Dolly Parton said that, didn't she?
I think he borrowed it from Dolly Parton.
Okay.
I saw him in an airport more recently than I've seen Dolly, so I'll give him the credit. It's like Ty goes to the runner. The problem here is that there's really no way to forecast against this. And I do think that we are going to see a whiplash effect in spending. And also, here's another question. What if you don't make it? What is
you stop
Duke,
spending
what,
the money. You've wasted
what is Duke
the money.
Football, it's a, baseball,
it is a
basketball.
Bet. It is not a...
Yeah, you're rolling the dice, so to speak.
Yeah, it's, if you make it, it's
make
an investment.
Cut,
yeah, know. If you don't make it, it's a bet you lost. And
you know
what
who else is... I mean, there's plenty of schools doing what right Duke is doing.
Yeah.
They just happen to have a really good year this year, right, which makes them easy to write about. But SMU, right, we've talked about, I mean, they literally bright bought their way into the... In the ACC, they're certainly making a fairly large multi, maybe billion-dollar bet
yes.
on themselves to do this. Those are that's the one that comes most yeah. to mind when I think about this.
And what about St.
Like
John's
I said
basketball,
earlier,
though?
With yeah. the private schools, I don't care. Yeah. It's their money.
All right.
Do what mm-hmm. you want with your own money. If mm-hmm. you end up wasting your own money, oh, well, it was your money to waste.
Andy, how many private schools are actually in the Final Four in college football, other than those Catholics in Indiana?
I'm asking. I know, but we're talking about Duke and Miami here. Oh,
hey,
wait, didn't Miami play the national title last year?
Miami's a private school.
It was a very public university.
Very
that was,
small
that was,
private school.
It was a very public university that was taking money pilfered from a children's hospital to fund its athletics program.
You're
in a roundabout way. That's my
You're
point.
Miami?
I'm saying.
No,
we're
Miami,
talking about
Miami
LSU.
Miami is using money that its medical center is generating because it's their money to
but
use
to your
however
point,
they want.
But to your point, but that's Miami as a business operation. That's not a public. What I'm saying is that this kind of mentality bleeds over into the public sector way more than people want to admit. And that's where you get the controversies and the scandals. And like, you know, that's where, to me, like my scandal meter, because I've never been a merit badge media guy, is like, I don't care if you're cheating. It's a little effed up if you're stealing money from a children's hospital.
If you're stealing is a different story. But again, like Miami using money from its own health system, which is a cash cow.
That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked off air about like Vanderbilt could wake up tomorrow with the amount of just the medical real estate that they have in the city of Nashville. If they wanted to funnel that into sports, you better look out. Clark Lee's going to be 5-time coach of the year. Like they would crush if they wanted to. And that's fine. They are a private institution. So if anything, to go back to Ross's story, which I think we've plugged very well, is this endeavor is fine. And it's we can all kind of sit with our arms crossed and say, all right, this is a calculated risk, but this is a private enterprise undertaking calculated risk. That's fine. That's the free market. That's what all those bros on Wall Street and their vests all slap each other in the back about.
They went to Duke.
Yes, they did. The problem is this. It's also going to be imitated by a ton of public universities. And that's where it gets scary.
It is going to be a race, as Ross said, to get in the club whenever the club forms. And the club is going to form sometime in the next 5 years. That's what this is.
Yeah, it might be sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of issues with the CSC and enforcement are only going to expedite the club.
Actually, Ross, I'm glad you brought that up. Because when we come back, we're going to talk about a very interesting story involving the CSC that has nothing to do with high dollar football players. But that's what makes it more interesting. Plus, one of those schools that's trying to buy its way into the club, did they ban dumbbells under 40 pounds in the weight room? Did that actually happen?
You're going to blow your shoulder out. You're going to tear your labrum.
We are back at the College Football Inquirer. And Ross, before we move on to dumbbells and dumbbells, you know, two different definitions of the word, let us first talk about another story you wrote. This one for On Three on Thursday. The CSC under siege from the Nebraska football players who are taking it to arbitration. That's not the really interesting case, though. The really interesting case is involving some Georgia women's athletes that are also challenging the CSC for deals that got rejected that have nowhere near the zeros.
No. In fact, they're missing four zeros.
A lot of zeros.
Three or four zeros.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're missing three or four zeros. Yes, it's two women athletes at the University of Georgia. This case has been percolating for several weeks, if not months, I believe. And now it's kind of getting to where they have requested an arbitrator be assigned to the case. So that hasn't happened quite yet, but should happen soon unless the case is magically resolved, which it could be at some point. But two women athletes, similar deals with a publicly traded company. But it's being facilitated by Learfield, the multimedia rights partner of Georgia. And because it's being facilitated by Learfield, it is deemed these deals are with associated entities because the multimedia rights partners are deemed associated entities. So not the where the money is coming from, right?
This is not the NCAA, company, but it is NCAA's for booster.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And so so any company that has, a significant deals or relationship with the school is deemed an associated entity. And those deals that get submitted with associated entities go through more of a rigorous process of approval, including the use of the range of compensation where a deal has to fall within this fair market value formula range that Deloitte has created. And that's where these deals, even though they're low value, they
How low value are we talking, Ross? What are we talking about dollar figures?
Yeah, I mean, combined, I believe, I've been led to believe that combined, these two deals are less than $5,000.
Okay.
What a great use of everyone's time.
Isn't it?
Again, this is not the NCAA, but it's essentially the same thing because it's the power
same thing.
Yeah, it's the NCAA by another name. And I've always wondered this, and I've said this for years, that the NCAA always needed a vice president of common sense. And it's basically a person who sits at a desk and you bring these cases to them and they go, stop worrying about that.
Yeah, shut up, dork.
We're not going to ban cream cheese. That would be stupid.
Shut up, dork. You just need someone behind a desk to be like stop it, nerd.
I firmly believe the thing that really led them down the path I think Michael Hosfeld and Jeffrey Kessler, the antitrust attorneys who ultimately took this whole system apart, I think they were on the scent before this. But when they banned cream cheese, that's probably when they were like, oh, we got him, boys. We got him. So this is essentially banning cream cheese right here.
This is normally your job. Can you please walk that out? Because as funny as it sounds,
Okay.
A lot of people don't remember this.
I forget that there may be some people who've forgotten when the NCAA banned cream cheese.
And so, Pastagate.
This did happen in the early aughts. There was a rule that somehow got through the entire NCAA legislative process.
Yes.
That it was okay to put out bagels for the athletes. But God forbid you put out spreads. May God have mercy on your soul if you put out spreads. That's a violation.
Too much.
This is why every organization that's filled with highly educated Duke grads who weren't that cool in high school, you need one dirtbag in every organization to just be like, look, stop it, nerds. This is
just
fine.
Just be cool, man.
Just shut up. Just shut up. I know it's not the letter of the law. Just shut up. We're going to get hell if we do this.
See, and that's what dirtbag needs to walk into the CSC offices and say, guys, it's $5,000.
Shut up, nerd. Yes, I'm telling you.
You're going to mess up our... Like, they're paying us good money to do nothing.
This is my consulting company.
Don't mess up my gig.
Yes, this is my consulting company. Think about all the thousands of employees at the NCAA and the fat checks and the amount of stupid money that funnels through that dumb organization. They would have exponentially fewer or less scrutiny if someone once in a while, to Andy's point, every two or three years is like, God, stop. Do not yell at the Oklahoma football players for the amount of pasta that they ate on a plate. That's a real story. Like, just shut up, nerd. Just shut up. Who's coming with me? Consulting firm. Who's coming with me?
Well, what's funny is I've been advocating for this for decades. I've gotten no bites.
We've seen this for decades at the NCAA. And now the power conferences got together, right, last year and created this new organization enforcement arm to take away part of the most of the enforcement division sort of the NCAA, I guess, to create this new system. And the new system is sort of given this case, sort of doing the same thing. And at the bidding of the conferences and schools, right? I mean, the CSC is following the policy set by these conferences in schools, the same conferences and schools that are now fighting against the policies. I mean, it's the whole thing is ridiculous.
I can be that dirtbag if they want me to be that dirtbag. I mean, I don't know, $500,000 a year. That'd probably be fair to be that dirtbag.
Good.
And how I would save them more than that by being like, guys, this entire enterprise could go down if you fight these two poor athletes who are trying to make their $3,000 and $2,000. Like, stop this right now. Yeah. No one will even know if you just let this go through.
I'm gonna undercut Andy in the bidding. And if you Venmo me $500 right now, NCAA/CSC, I will just make a voice memo of me saying, shut up, dork. And then you just play that in every meeting.
Now, see, here's the thing.
That's all you
this
need.
This is how you soak the money out of these sorts of entities.
Yes.
You get a contract so that you're on call as needed. Like, there's not a set number of hours or anything, but you're on call. Essentially, they just text you, hey, so there's a basketball player in one of the power conferences. She's got a deal that's going to pay her $2,500 for 5 Instagram posts. That doesn't necessarily fall in the parameters here.
Right.
What should we do about that?
Cut to me at home playing PlayStation. Just be like, shut up, dork.
Yeah.
And then just hang up.
Have it as an
invoice, right?
Yeah.
You just send an invoice. Yeah.
I like this. Yeah. I like this idea.
This is what I'm telling you. You cannot fill an entire organization with Eagle Scouts and FCA captains and all that. You can do that. You just need one person who is like, I don't know, been arrested once or just been in trouble once or twice in their life to try and meter out your naivete.
You need that kid from school who was incredibly intelligent, like probably got a great SAT score, but didn't have great grades and spent more time trying to figure out how to get out of doing work than it would have taken to actually do the work. That's the person you need.
Andy, my parents listen to this show, so I just want to go ahead and acknowledge the irony of this description.
But that's you?
That's me.
Okay.
Extremely, terrifyingly high ACT score, terrible GPA in a Mississippi public high school.
Yep. That was my friend
Indianapolis,
Chris growing up.
Call me, Indianapolis. I'm waiting.
So that is what you need to do. Is it what they're going to do?
No.
Of course not.
Of course not.
They will probably fight this tooth and nail. And this, not the Nebraska thing, which involves lots of money in football, will probably end up being their downfall because, you know. Yep. In other news of things that you just don't need to make a thing.
Shut up, jocks.
Adam Brenneman, former Penn State football player, excellent podcaster, went to visit Texas Tech. He releases a clip with some Texas Tech football players. It's since gone viral. They're taking a tour of the weight room, and Brenneman gets told they took every weight under 40 pounds out of their weight room. And his statement on the tweet is, love this, no shortcuts.
This was told to Brenneman by someone at Texas Tech. I want to clarify. All right, Andy, now what happens?
Video of some players showing him the dumbbell racks.
The media did not do this before. Every lazy MAGA chud
someone
out there
from
is like, oh,
a medium
typical
did media.
This, but the media didn't do this. Some bro at Texas Tech who decided he's going to do shoulders. All right, go ahead. I'm going to start screaming. Finish this.
Okay, first of all, Texas Tech does not only have 40 pounds and up dumbbells. So, because I know all of our weight room listeners are going, wait, how are they doing lateral raises? How are they doing front raises?
Yes.
Because some of their larger linemen can probably do front raises and lateral raises with 40-pound dumbbells. But
warming up.
If you DBs don't know what we're talking about, if you don't know what you're talking
about. What
about
the ones with
stand-up?
Who rehabbing?
Yeah.
I mean, this is...
Stand up right now if you're listening to this and then pick up something heavy and just take your arm straight and raise it to your eye and try and figure out if you could do that with 40 pounds.
Listen to this weakling on social media who responded to this. Hopefully just performative for social media and not actually true. Would be wildly absurd and irresponsible. Also, jumping straight to 40 pounds would literally be a shortcut. So no shortcuts doesn't really apply.
Absolutely.
What nerd said this?
Good point.
JJ Watt.
Yes.
Go JJ.
Every strength and conditioning person, every strength and conditioning mutual I have on social was blowing up about this. I work with a trainer every week because I'm in my mid-40s and I wasn't a high school athlete. I was playing Magic the Gathering, so of course I need the assistance. You cannot do this. Now, here's what pissed me off. This was a misunderstanding and a funny social media moment until Joey McGuire trots out the easiest excuse in the world, which is to blame us in the media. He said, quote, "There's some people on there portraying themselves as experts when they're not." I guess he means J.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt.
They're nowhere close.
Noted non-weight room goer J.J. Watt.
they just happen to play sports. Yeah, J.J. Watt just happened to play sports. He just happened to be one of the best defensive linemen in the history of the NFL. He just happened to do that. Who are you mad at? Your player was giving a tour on a piece of, like, I guess you could call it social media, but I mean, what Brenneman does is no different than what we do in the larger scale of it, right?
And it's funny, and so Brenneman very quickly realizes what's happened here.
Yes.
And he says, "Some of these replies need to relax. Texas Tech is one of the best strength staffs in the country. I'm sure if someone needs lighter weights, they have them." They do. Like, it's in the Texas Tech produced podcast, Joey McGuire and their host were showing off the 15-pound dumbbells this week.
Look at these bad boys.
I was explaining this to a physical therapist, this story, because I was standing there talking to my trainer. I was talking to a PT about this. And the funniest part is, like, this. So there, and I'm going to botch this and they're going to hear it and they're going to make fun of me. But again, I wasn't good at school. There are three smaller muscles, like, in your shoulder. And this happens all over your body, where you have to use light weight to, like, warm them up. And they're stabilizing muscles. And that's what you warm up before you do, like, a bench press or an overhead press with, like,
or
all the weight
press,
where you look
with your shoulders.
Where you look cool on Instagram. It would be insane. You would have the highest injury rate in the conference, at least, if you actually removed all this. And this is as dumb as fellow Big 12er, former Baylor head coach Art Briles. I read his whole biography when I was writing a profile on him. And amongst other dumbassery, he said that you don't need to ever stretch because he's never seen a leopard or a cheetah stretch ever in his life. Once in a while,
has he ever been to the zoo? They sleep all the time. When they wake up, you know what the first thing they do is?
They stretch. Yes. Well, you know, listening to Art Briles about anything to do with human biology or social integration is probably not a good idea at this point. I think we've established McGuire should not be mad at us. McGuire should not be mad at J.J. Watt.
No, run your ship be mad better. At all. It's just one of those wacky misunderstandings that happens in the world of social media.
Yeah.
Make a joke out of it, which I think they have now.
Yes, they should, definitely.
Yeah.
Andy, here's what they should do. You ready? I got a pitch for Texas Tech, if you're listening. Because I actually know that their comms social media team, a couple mutuals there. Here's what we do for touchdown celebrations in 26. What I want you to do is don't dunk a basketball. Don't do a chain. What I want you to get, and they're in every gym right now in America, those hot pink, like 4.5 pound weights. You know what I'm talking about? Like 80s jazzercise style.
The little
style.
Rubber.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, the little rubber dumbbells.
I want you guys to do kind of like a modified front raise, like a lat, a little bit of this right here, just like this.
I like it.
I'm on video right now, kind of doing like
a little lateral raise. Yeah,
yeah. But they have to be hot pink, and they have to say no shortcuts on them.
That's hide them in the goalpost padding, like T.O. did that cell phone that one time. You're gonna get a 15-yard penalty, but it'd be so worth it.
See, I was just saying, dude, do it on the sideline. Just a little hop. Just two.
Yeah, if you have
three,
props,
it
has to be on the sideline. So I'm all for that.
Yeah, that's how you turn this into something funny, and we move on from an otherwise stupid story. But I did enjoy the stupid
Stephen story. Godfrey, by the way, has made his pitch to be the dirtbag who helps out the CSC.
Yeah, and Jazzercise.
The guy who coordinates your Jazzercise-related touchdown celebrations.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
I'm out here creating jobs.
Okay, Ross and I will be back Tuesday. Godfrey is probably going to get hired away before that.
John Duncan's going to call me for sure. Yeah, that's going to happen. He might call me something, but he ain't calling me.
But other than that, Ross and I will be back Tuesday, and we'll talk to you then.